All right, guys. So back to the matter of the day. The next speaker is Kiam, who works at Evervault. And I think it's quite exciting to have a bit of a complementary perspective in let's say, this exciting new field where we talk a lot about new technologies. But you will actually talk about how to use them in production. So take it away.
Thanks. So I work for Evervault. And I will talk about Evervault to begin with, just so you know why we use enclaves in production and not just traditional computing. So we offer, also, I don't know how loud that is. If I'm too quiet, tell me so I can speak louder. So we offer tooling to allow customers to guarantee data security in different forms, like encryption before it ever hits your system, or ways to process said encrypted data in secure environments, and so on and so forth. At the core of all of this is enclaves. We're running on AWS, so we're using the Nitro enclaves, which, as far as I can tell, aren't as open source as the Intel SGX or any of that stuff. But we've been doing this for a couple of years now, and that was when we started the best we could find for doing VMs that guaranteed the security model that we required. So, like I said, encryption. We're running in fully isolated VMs where we can basically see nothing that's happening inside the VM without a lot of effort on our part, which is mainly so we can protect our users' data. Just to give the context, Relay is our main product, is what I would say. It's an encryption proxy. You put it in front of your service, and you define some rules. And before the service, your request ever hit you, the rules are applied, and all your data is encrypted. Sorry, I lost my mouse. It's very much focused on web services, but it's mainly for people who want to de-scope their environment so they can be more PCI compliant or protect HIPAA data and stuff like that. Relay doesn't run in an enclave, mainly due to performance reasons, because it's processing lots of network requests and we want it to get quick, because encryption is slow and we don't want to add overhead to our users. So we store all of our keys inside a KMS that is accessed from a secure enclave. That service, we have no access to the keys then. When on startup, it tests connections to the KMS, pulls down user keys, decrypts them, and then we are able to process the user's requests, and but outside of that environment, we can't replicate anything. Problems started, though, when more users joined us and we started to scale. At first, we just had a lot of automation. That was stuff like, how do you run Docker containers in enclaves? How do you make sure that you can scale up or scale down? AWS Nitro enclaves are guest VMs on top of EC2 nodes. There's not much automation about actually running what's in there, so we had to build it all ourselves and get all that running and actually performing requests for our users. So after we got all that running, we had issues with just the libraries in general. So the parts of AWS that are open source are all the interface libraries for connecting to them. But we found that there's many, many edge cases where they just were very poorly documented or not documented at all about how do you interact with it, how do you work with the proxies. So for reference, for those that haven't used it, you need to run a VSOC. No, there is a VSOC on your host for communicating with the secure enclave, and this is the only IO you have in and out of the VM. You then need to manage all the connections yourself and how you transfer data in and out and communicate. We ran into some really fun problems, though, trying to like use this and talking to the AWS guys about using their library and getting stuff. The funnest one, I think, was we lost we were dropping, we had file descriptor leakage. So our VM, guest VMs were dying because we just couldn't connect to them anymore because we'd run out of file descriptors on them, which I had not seen in a long time aside from just like breaking my own machine, which was fun. It turned out we just made some assumptions about how stuff worked because we thought, oh, this is how it works in Rust. And no, that wasn't how it worked in the library. And we were just not reading the code, but we needed to read the code, which was unfortunate because I would have liked it to be in the docs. It really showed that there was no metrics or observability for these enclaves. We weren't able to know what's happening inside them or how to interact with them. So we started trying to monitor them. This was interesting. So like I said, no metrics, no nothing. I realize you probably can't see a lot of those graphs, but these were our load tests. So we started to try and get metrics out of them. Because there's limited I/O, we didn't want to like just try and put a metrics collector inside them and shoot all the metrics out to Datadog or AWS. So we started instrumenting the clients that we were talking to it with, and we started sending loads of data at it and trying out different workloads. So a lot of black box testing. This was several weeks of just staring at graphs that I may have gone a little insane during, but we're here now and it worked. So once we got through it all, we were able to like find different bottlenecks in the code, but based on guesses and automation changes, we were able to go from, I don't know if you can see that, but about 1,500 requests per second, no, encryptions per second inside the enclave to about 5,000 encryptions per second just by switching our default curve, which we hadn't ever considered, because we encourage our users to set the curve, but it made massive improvements for us. But we had no idea that the encryptions themselves were the bottleneck because we couldn't see what was happening inside of our enclaves or the VMs and know like where our workloads were slowing down. So we then had to, once we started doing the observability, we really went in on it. We did this black box testing and we found the limits pretty quickly. We had to guess where the bottlenecks were and just, there was a whiteboard in the office of like, here are ideas we have to try in different configurations. We just worked our way, taking each box off and turning stuff on and on until we were able to actually like get some improvements from it. We then started working on a level of, so AWS does have a concept of debug logs, but the moment you turn it on, your enclave isn't actually attestable anymore. The attestation variables all just turn to zero, and you're not able to attest your connection. And like I mentioned before, we need to be able to attest the connection to the KMS to actually even load keys into it, so we couldn't run in debug mode at all. We had to figure it out. So we had to basically re-implement a level of tracing, like if anyone's familiar with OpenTelemetry and stuff, we had to kind of come up with a way of doing traced requests inside of it. We couldn't use OpenTelemetry because it had no understanding of how to communicate outside of the VM, so we had to take concepts, re-implement them, and come up with a way of batching requests, sending them out, and limiting the amount of I/O overhead that we were doing that. We eventually got there, and we were able to like monitor our boxes. That's when we started to notice more problems. So we had these two processes in the enclave talking to each other, and we expected the green line there, yellow line would be perfect, that was our local dev environment, but the green line is what we wanted to see in production. The blue line is what we were seeing in production. I wasn't allowed to put the lines of the numbers on it to be specific here, but that was about a 20x slowdown, I think, which was insane. We're still debugging this one. We're not 100% sure where the bottlenecks are. We're fairly certain it's basically the virtualization of the network layer inside the containers is just insanely slow. So what we're looking at is how can we like short circuit that. There's some things like SOC maps. You can like reroute sockets. But effectively, you can't just take a container and throw it, take a process and throw it in, or take two processes and throw it into the VM and think, oh yeah, that'll work. It works on my machine. It does not just magically work. You need to like really tune the system to actually be able to talk effectively. So we're still tuning it. We're hoping to have some stuff to note soon about like ways to speed it up with SOC map and different improvements. Like I said, it's seemingly either the VM or the user space networking. The fun one, which I think was like a lot of people who've worked with Enclave will like go, duh, like of course you had time slippage. There's no NTP in an Enclave. You can mount the PTP of the hypervisor, but again, that invalidates our security model for PCI, so we had to actually synchronize with NTP, which meant we need to add another layer of periodic work that needs to be done by the guest box to ensure that the VM could actually know what the hell time it was. We noticed that we were losing a second a day, which is quite a lot when you are doing, and that was based on traffic volume as well. More traffic, more time we lost, but if we did nothing, it was just 1 second a day. That really got into it when we had to do anything that was sensitive, such as token validation. So auth effectively broke if a VM was running for more than 3 days, which led us to a cron job that just cycled VMs for every 3 days for a little while until we re-implemented NTP through the VSOC. Fun. These are a lot of, like, yeah. So we kept running into issues, and we kind of said, why is this so painful? It should be easy to just deploy a service into an enclave, give other people the ability to, like, say, yeah, that person who hosts my cloud computer definitely can't see the data being processed, and I can guarantee it. Really useful for health data or financial data, which are our main customers. So we put it all together and have a product called Enclaves if you want an easy way to do hosted enclaves. So you can effectively we'll give you a Docker container. No, we don't give you anything actually. We give you a CLI and you build the Docker container with a Docker file into a secure enclave. You are given PCRs, so it's fully attested. You give us your secure enclave and we run it for you. We put our data plane and control plane our data plane into the enclave, and it talks to the control plane that we use, so you can leverage it. All of that's open source, so you can reproduce the builds yourself and validate all the attestation that's the same and ensures that everything is communicating effectively and there's no, and well, me or my team aren't like messing with your code or changing it or anything like that. So it's just regular Docker containers. The connection is fully attestable, and you can like connect to it. I see 10 minutes, and I probably don't need that long. So, we're working on this. We're taking everything we learned from building our own service, putting it into our EverVault enclaves, and it's on our GitHub. If you want to have a look and go through it, we want to be able to people to be able to look at it, see that we're not doing anything wrong, and try it out, and hopefully have a better experience getting onboarded with confidential computing than we had, because it was a lot of like throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what broke, where it broke, and trying to figure it out. I'm going to go for questions then.
You said you had problems with KERS, presumably using ECC. Do you have any idea why the KERS might have been a problem? Are you hitting page boundaries, packet boundaries, or any ideas?
Yep. So what we were seeing was that it was in the CPU, there was optimizations that we hadn't accounted for. So by default, the box we were developing on ARM Max, who were highly optimized for the curve we were using in default, which led us to like say, great, look at the performance here on our local machines. Deployed to production, performance crashed. turns out the AWS boxes we were running on were optimized for the standard K1 curve or R1 curve. I can't remember which one it is now, but basically wrong curve. And we were, and even in the enclave, those optimizations still come true. So we were able to get 20x performance gains from that, I think. Anyone else?
Can you elaborate a bit on the nature of the payload or whatever you're executing there? Because I mean, we saw there are pretty much encryption transactions, but what was exactly running there?
So what do we run in the enclave? So the benchmark was basically fuzzing was what we were doing, but we send. So as I mentioned, in the enclaves, we have all our customer keys each in it. So we had one of our keys in there that we would send 20,000. So we would have 20,000 fields to encrypt. And we'd say each of these fields, we're going to iterate through this dictionary and encrypt it. So we'd send just a generic JSON blob. But for purposes of encryption, we could send just be a Boolean or a string or whatever and just send it in. And we then would iterate through that JSON blob, and it would have it would say, I am this user or application, which would then cause the service to choose the right key. And it would then say, these are the fields inside the JSON blob to find and encrypt. So it was JSON blob and ID and fields to encrypt. Very simple payload, but it was just iterative work. And because of how the encryption is implemented, it's all blocking work, so we'd have to farm out the work differently. Not like directly related to enclaves, but when we did the load testing, we determined that we were blocking and dropping connections in the service. So what was happening was the connection, we'd schedule the work on the enclave, and then the connection from the upstream service would die. Then we wouldn't propagate that connection dying downstream. The enclave would do the work, try to send the encryption back, and then go, oh, no one wants this work, and stop. So we had to put some keep alives in the connections. But these are, again, the things we missed because we were having to re-implement just what would be generic TCP or HTTP for talking over the VSOC in the enclave.
So you mentioned the architecture you are using made you adapt your cryptographic parameters. Yeah. So how would that scale up to the future? I mean, crypto agility facing. Any words on that?
I don't know. I'm the SRE who's meant to make stuff scale, but that's actually outside of my domain. We have people who understand cryptography a lot better than me in the company who would be able to answer that question. I can give you an email address if you want to talk about it, but I can't speak myself on that.
Thanks a lot for the great talk. So I wanted to go a little bit back to like the use case you presented in the beginning, and I might have missed something, but it sort of sounds to me that like the use case here was not really like a sort of protection at runtime, but it's kind of like a long-term protection of the keys, and not while they are used by the proxy, but where they are in store. So did you like consider other solutions for this, like HSMs, and do you have like any insights there that why did you end up choosing the Nitro enclaves for this particular use case?
So I'll be honest, that predates me at the company. I'm not sure why it is. I would say that we did level of evaluation that were probably not too deep. We are a startup trying to find our feet at the time, and we had implemented a level of encryption just inside a process. And then when we attempted to secure it and build it, the enclaves seemed like an easy solution. I think that we've proven they were not an easy solution. But yeah, what we validated were just ways to do encryption that would guarantee we didn't have access to the user's keys and we couldn't decrypt any of their data. And yeah, enclaves seemed easy. In reality, not so easy.
So there's one online question. Can you explain the attested TLS protocol that you use? Is the protocol specified somewhere, and has it been formally verified?
Yeah. So it is. So we actually had to re-implement it. I can't remember which one we did, but we've looked at one that was done by the Confidential Computing Consortium, or at least a paper that was published on it, and it was attestation in TLS connection in certs as our original implementation. That then, I can't remember the specifics of it, so I will have to refer you to our Git history on this. We deployed it, and we were unable to use it in production because people had to add our root CA to their root CA store because you couldn't extend TLS in the way that was specified in the RCA for customers. So we eventually had to switch to a new attestation, which unfortunately I'm not the expert on, but it is available for anyone to read. It's written in Rust. It's on, actually it is linked in the talks on the page in the FOSDEM under attestation bindings. So anyone can look at the protocol we use for attesting it. Effectively, we leverage the PCRs that are provided by the underlying Nitro enclave and then we have an attestation protocol that on connection, we do a TLS handshake that then performs the attestation, and the client must supply the attestation bindings. And we have implementations on the client side in Go, Rust, Node, Ruby, Python. Actually, not Ruby, just Python and Node and Go. Oh, and Swift and Kotlin.
So there was also a bit of discussion in the chat here about micro enclaves and in what far you can call them a TE. And I know this is an endless debate, and we even had the explicit debate last year.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe can you very briefly react to that and maybe also say a bit about the infrastructure you built, how tight it is to micro enclaves and from
GAN-based? Yeah. So repeating the question, it's the debate about Nitro enclaves versus TEs. They are not, as I said, they're not as open source because it's mainly on the client side they're open source rather than the server side. And it's mainly just white papers, I believe, that specify how the Nitro enclaves operate or just documentation. And the other part of the question was, so how specific is the tooling to Nitro? So we did evaluate other cloud providers to see if we could move off to it. This was done a year and a half ago. We looked at Azure for doing it. Azure didn't have the new Intel SGX, or was it SGX? TDX, sorry. They didn't have the TDX at the time, so we validated that it couldn't fit our model of secure computing. We probably need to reevaluate now, but the tooling is very AWS focused right now and Nitro Enclave focused because it was about trying to make Nitro Enclaves easier for us to use. Conceptually though, the control plane and data plane aren't specific to that so far as they could be re-implemented for anything that wants to do TCP over a network connection for inside an enclave and outside an enclave.